Today's podcast is brought to you by American Independence Gold Group. American Independence Gold can show you the benefits of converting your retirement accounts into a tax-sheltered IRA with physical gold. Go to HowieCarGold.com and watch my video to learn about the benefits of investing with American Independence Gold. Check it out today at HowieCarGold.com.
Howie Carr, Boston Herald columnist and radio hitman.
Howie is sort of an insidious force in this area.
By the way, do we have Howie Carr?
He's around here someplace. Where's Howie? Where is Howie?
You know Howie Carr?
Howie, where the hell are you? The legendary Howie. He's got that radio going.
We love Howie Carr, right?
I was referred to today as 1970s Boston.
Hey, paperboy.
It comes from the tabloid talk show stuff in Boston, and it was concocted there.
It's Howie Carr.
He's a good guy, isn't he, though?
Welcome to the Howie Carr Show. We have a special guest here this afternoon. And again, if you'd like to join us later, 844-500-4242, 844-500-4242. Yesterday, we spoke to Alan Jackson, the defense lawyer for Karen Reed, and today we are joined in studio by Paula Brado. She was juror number 11.
Yes.
In the case. And thank you so much for coming in, Paula. And you wanted to say something first to the O'Keefe family.
Yes, one of the reasons why I want to come out and give my my story, my side of the story, was to let the message for them that it's not our fault that they didn't find who killed John O'Keefe. The Commonwealth and the investigation, they couldn't prove that was Karen Reed. And for us, we had enough reasonable doubt that wasn't her, and we couldn't convict her of anything. And I really hope the O'Keefes find who actually killed John O'Keefe, and the DA reopened the case and things keep going from there. I will be following. I'll be watching closely because I broke my heart to see that family leaving court that day.
How about seeing the Reed family in court? Did you?
Yes. Well, the moment of last Wednesday, they were, of course, happy, tears of joy. I didn't pay much attention on them that moment. I was more looking for the family of John O'Keefe leaving the court. But yeah, I did saw them like being very emotional and happy for Karen Reed, and I'm happy for them too. I hope Karen Reed disappear for a while and can have a vacation, because I imagine it was a roller coaster for her, very drowning experience. Hell, she lost so much already, and her family as well. So I hope they can get some peace and rest and keep going with their lives. But the reason why I came out wasn't to get like validation for Karen Reed or Karen Reed's family. It was because really I would like John O'Keefe's family to know that we feel for them. I feel deeply for them, and I know the other jurors do too.
Now, I remember when they were picking the alternates and the people who were actually going to consider the case, Turtle Boy said he knew that he would know the fix was in if they got rid of jurors number 5, 10, and 11. So he, after watching you, he figured you were leaning towards an acquittal.
Yes, I didn't know who Turtle Boy was before. To be quite honest, every time I saw a billboard, free Karen Reed, and then next to a free Turtle Boy, I thought it was some environmental problem. It's like, I'm not going to look into it. It's something with turtles, maybe? I really didn't know, because I'm not from Massachusetts. I'm from Brazil. And I moved to Massachusetts just a year ago. And I don't follow local news. I have young children, so I just watch Netflix all day with cartoons. And my news and my social media is all in Brazil, and with the news over there and politics, international politics and everything. So I wasn't aware of Turtle Boy or Karen Reed. And when I think I saw him now that I saw his face. I saw him maybe twice at the trial. I remember him twice. I don't know why he picked me. I was like his favorite juror, but thank you, I guess.
So what was the most compelling piece of evidence that gave you reasonable doubt?
The piece of taillight, no doubt. Like, see that piece of taillight close up, having in my hand, and compare the broken piece with a new piece and the videos of Karen Reed leaving the house at 5:07 in the morning on the 29th, and then her car being towed from her parents' house at 29 afternoon. I saw like red light coming out of it. So it couldn't be that much of a damage on a taillight if we could see the red shining. And we did a close-up, we stopped, we took a picture, we zoom in, and
this was the jury.
That was
the
jury, yeah.
Yeah, you just kept looking at it?
Yeah, we keep looking, making comparison with the taillight, the broken taillight, a real new taillight, and the videos. And that type of damage, that big damage, wasn't there when she left the house at 5:07 or when they told the car in her parents' house.
So do you think the taillight was planted at 34 Fairview?
That's one of the theories we had for not convicting her. Doesn't seem like her taillight was broken. Doesn't seem like it was a collision. And if it was a collision, I think we would see more damage in his body. So that was the reasonable doubt right there. We put her on the scene. She, of course, dropped him off. We know she had some drinks. So there was some doubts. Maybe she did back up and clipped him accidentally, like she said in her interviews. Maybe she back up so fast that he got scared and jump away and fall. So many things could happen. But the collision being the reason why he died, I don't believe so.
How about all the videos that Hank Brennan played for you guys from the interviews? Did they have any impact on the jury?
It did, because at first we don't know if we, well, I didn't know if we could see the videos and give a heavy weight to it, heavy evidence.
In deliberation.
Yeah, in deliberation. We didn't know, so we sent a message to the judge, because with text messages, she gave us the instruction that we should consider in the text message as state of mind of Karen Reed or whoever was writing the message. So we weren't sure about the video. One thing that some jurors point out is that the video was cut. It so Brennan just want to show us parts of it, the parts that were interesting to him, right? Clearly, we all knew that.
The parts that were designed to influence
you. Yes.
You understood that they'd been selectively edited.
Of course, we all did. We are a group of smart people, and every juror has this clear. Like, of course, he selected. Sometimes we even mention. They explain things so many times to us, so repetitive. It feels like they think we're not going to understand. But
well, Brennan kept doing that over and over again. If he liked an answer, he would ask that. He would ask it again and again. Did that impress you when he would do that?
No, that was annoying. because we got in the first place. You don't need to keep repeating. It's fine. We got it, the message. I miss what we're talking about. I'm sorry.
So let me ask you, who was the most credible witness, do you think?
Credible.
Just believable.
Believable. Dr. La Posada, the last doctor from the defense, she gave an impression of being extremely knowledgeable and sincere and straightforward on her answers. The police lab experts, their findings were believable and they work what was given to them. So if they have a shirt with a DNA of a taillight in the shirt, because that was given to them. So they work what the material they had. So I trust them. They were believable.
Was there any witnesses that you didn't find believable? Like, for instance, the Dr. Blue Man group or the guy that had taken 17 years to get his college degree?
Yeah. So Dr. Blue Man... I think they just did a poor job. You know, as a business, I think they should, keep up with the game and get better results next time as a accident reconstruction. I don't think he could be trying to just give us the false impression, but he just did a poor job for the amount of money he was paid.
Did that bother the jury?
Yes.
$400,000?
Yes.
It really did bother?
Yes. Every time we get in the buzz, especially in the beginning, we always think how much money the city, the state is putting on this police, following us, the buzz and everything. And then on top of this, all the money was spent on Hank Brennan and this aperture, yeah, bothers me a lot.
So what about the scratches on John O'Keefe's arm?
The scratches didn't seem like came from a taillight, because if the taillight hit him and caused that, I think the damage on his t-shirt or hoodie would be different. The direction of the stretch were too similar to be caused by something just cracked.
Do you think anybody believed that they were caused by the taillight? Anybody in the jury?
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
There are people, yeah. Yeah, definitely. There are people who weren't sure. I do believe looks like a dog for you. It feels like a dog. But some people think it could be something else, not a dog and not a taillight. It could be something else.
Now, there was one thing that never came out. It was frustrating to people watching at home who knew what was going on. And that was the fact that Doctors Wolf and Rentschler, you know now who they were hired by. Mm-hmm. They were hired by the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Does it bother you now that they kept that information from you?
No, it didn't make a difference, because once they said, oh, yeah, we are contacted by an agency. So Jane McCabe said that right in the beginning, an agency or an entity came to our house, and that's raised the suspicion in my head, maybe the FBI. And then later on, the Officer Dever.
Yeah, Kelly Dever.
Yes. Yeah. She also said, yeah, this entity or this agency called me. And Alan Jackson made sure the words entity and another agency, not the defense, not the Commonwealth. He made sure we knew that. So if we exclude both of them, FBI, and I think everybody noticed, everybody realized.
That's what we were wondering at home. We were wondering if you guys were getting the message.
Yeah, I realized right in the beginning. I don't know how long it took for other people to realize that. But every time after Jane McCabe bring it up, and Alan Jackson mentioned a few times, and then Dever came in, was, okay, it's FBI. I have on my notebook, like, FBI ? In many, many places.
What about the fact that Jen McCabe, you know, she was one of their star witnesses. She admits that she lied. First question she's asked by the other agency, she lies. What did that make you think?
Because she was right in the beginning, I was very open-minded to hear everybody, and I didn't make an opinion about Jen McCabe at that point. She could be overwhelmed in that morning. Her friend just died, and she doesn't want to talk to anyone. I don't know how the FBI agents look like, if they look like someone from church who want to give the word of God. I don't know. I don't know what, you know, she maybe didn't want to talk to anyone because of the situation, and she lied right away. But now that I have a better sense of the whole story, yeah, I think maybe she wants to be prepared first. But my personal opinion, I don't know.
Did you believe anything she said?
I think she had a good, believable story, but I don't think it states the fact, because it doesn't make sense, this story.
You know, in what sense?
The way it was, you know, one thing that really bothers me, how she was always saying, and Carrie too, she was hysteric. She was screaming. She was crazy. It's like, of course, her boyfriend just died. And for me, stop pointing out. Felt like a witch hunting, some type of thing. Like they want to get Karen no matter what. I don't know. Nobody were there. I don't know what happened and why she would lie. But the story was well said. The tale was good. But didn't seem to.
It was rehearsed. Yeah, is what you're saying. Yeah. It was rehearsed. Yeah. But as you studied it, it
doesn't seem to be true. Yeah.
It came apart. What about Kelly Dever? Now you brought her up. She was another the Boston police detective, and she had a false memory. How did you react to hearing suddenly about a false memory?
For me, it's false memory is like, remember if I had breakfast this morning or not, because I was in a rush and I had to leave the room. I don't remember. I have a false memory of having coffee, but I don't know. A false memory full of details, like what she remember, falsely remember, it's too much. And that person, she was called by the commissioner, right?
Yeah, Michael Cox.
Yeah, why? Do the right thing. Why? I mean, don't you trust your cops already going to do the right thing? You really need to call her. And she just started. Who is called from the boss right in the beginning of their career to have a tip on how to react in the court? So she wasn't believable at all. And she was uncomfortable to watch her behavior. Because she's an officer after all, and she's, you know, among us, and she carries a gun, and she was not reliable and scary knowing that she's around holding a weapon, honestly.
We will have more of the interview in a while. We've had to edit it for time, but we'll have the entire unedited interview up on the website, HowieCarshow.com, shortly after the top of the hour. I had my first appointment at Perfect Smiles, and it was a good thing I scheduled it early because I needed a filling replaced. Bacteria from a compromised filling can also irritate the surrounding gums, potentially contributing to gingivitis or periodontal disease. Dr. Houghton was able to take me right away, and he is the best. This is why I only go to Perfect Smiles in Nashua, New Hampshire. It is so worth the trip. While visiting, I met three listeners. They came from Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire. Perfect Smiles is worth the trip. They're equipped to expertly handle all your dental needs. Grace goes to Dr. Tam for her Invisalign. I go to Lori for cleanings, and the mailroom manager and I have both had amazing smile makeovers by Dr. Houghton. With dental implants, TMJ, or smile upgrades, Perfect Smiles has the first-class team to take care of you. Listeners travel from northern Maine, from Cape Cod, from all over New England to have all their dental needs met by the best team anywhere. Visit PerfectSmiles.com and take a look at my testimonial video or call them at 603-595-6699. Perfect Smiles. Change your smile. Change your life. I'm Howie Carr.
Howie Carr will return. Howie Carr is back.
Why do you believe you should get your job back?
In 12 years, I've never had a single complaint. I've never been the subject of any disciplinary actions. All my employee evaluations are either outstanding or excellent. And I still love the job. I still want to be a trooper. And I'm fighting for it. You know, I'm going through the appeals process now.
I'd prefer to be a trooper making $250,000 a year for driving around drunk in my cruiser and framing people and looking for nudes on their cell phones than my other employment option, my only other employment option, cutting the putting greens at President's Golf Course in Squantum. That's why he wants his job back. I mean, who's kidding who here? Enjoy the sounds of summer with Raycon. That's Michael Proctor, by the way. Get 32 hours of battery life and active noise cancellation at half the price of other premium audio brands. Right now, get up to 15% off at buyraycon.com/Howie. Buyraycon.com/Howie. Taylor, having set up the poll question like that, what is the poll question?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at HowieCarshow.com, is... Disgraced, corrupt ex-trooper Michael Proctor says he should be rehired by the Massachusetts State Police. Do you agree?
No.
98% say no. Sorry to have failed you. It should be 99.
It should be. I'm very disappointed in the early voting going on here this afternoon. Yeah, and by the way, this thing, there's a story in the Globe. We've talked about this, but... all of the lawyers that have any defendants in cases that involve Michael Proctor are now demanding all of his cell phone material, all of the district attorney's cell phone communications. And as Alan Jackson said, after listening to some of the interview yesterday on this show, everybody ought to be seeking appeals and various motions, filings, habeas corpus, all that stuff. He is so dirty. And the thought that he could ever even consider Even in his wildest dreams, getting his job back shows how out of touch he is. Get thee out of the Commonwealth, Michael Proctor. I'm Howie Carr.
It's Howie Carr.
844-500-4242. 603 says the only law enforcement job Michael Proctor should have is perhaps walking the beat at a mall. That's it. On behalf of the International Brotherhood of Mall Cops, I'm going to say, how dare you? How dare you suggest Michael Proctor should defame our trade or profession?
How dare you?
844-500-4242. Proctor thinks he deserves to get his job back. I wonder how Karen feels about getting her job back. Hose long to get Karen's reputation back. Good point, 513. Yeah. So we're going to play some more, the second part of this interview, the final part. It's going to run about, for the most of this segment here. And it gets into the Proctor text messages. He returns to the scene of the crime, so to speak. And we'll talk about the judge, Auntie Bev, and how Brennan's demeanor deteriorated as his case did the same as the days went by. And she is a true crime fan. You know, I noticed this. I had a copy of You Understand American, a couple of copies, and she started looking at it. And I said, Paul, I want you to have this. And we give her a couple other books, too. So she's going to switch from Brazilian true crime to Boston true crime, I guess. And we really appreciate her coming in and telling us what happened. But now here's the rest of our interview with juror number 11, Paula Prado. So what about the text messages that were read by Yuri Bukenik? Michael Proctor's text messages.
First of all, who is Michael Proctor? Because none of us knew.
Really?
Yes. I didn't know. Again, I'm not from here. I'm not from Massachusetts. I don't know who are the police around here.
He's a cancer. That's how Alan Jackson described
exactly,
him in the opening.
Exactly, but that's all we knew, why he's a cancer. And then the text messages came in, and then we learned that he was fired. Okay, so he was fired. He's not going to be called to the stand. Okay, fine. And I saw the text messages as an unprofessional, of course, immature, horrifying. Horrifying. He was the head of investigation. Doesn't matter how many times you, Bukenik, not want to say that, avoid to say that he was the leader or the head of investigation. Of course, he was the head of investigation. And I'm glad he's fired, and I hope he finds, you know, his way out.
He wants his job back. He said that last night on NBC.
I heard that he gave an interview I didn't have a chance to see yet.
What did you think of Judge Cano?
To the jury, she was a very nice judge. She'll protect us. We felt safe in courthouse and everything. There was some moments that I think there was too much objection from Mr. Brennan, and she would sustain and not let Alan Jackson continue or Mr. Alessi continue. And then opposite, when Alan Jackson would object something, she would allow Mr. Brennan to keep going with information that maybe we're not supposed to hear. I don't know. So it's at least with the defense witnesses in the past week, I felt there was a lot of, it was easy for the Commonwealth to say whatever they want, and she was allowing. And also, I'm sorry, there were some moments with sarcasm and some rude comments between one another that just kept going during trial. I wish the judge would just stop that.
Such as?
Deborah, for example, was one of them. The way she talked to the attorneys, the defense attorney, she was just so rude and agitated. Let me remember. In the past, was between Brandon and Dr. Russell.
Yeah.
So the dog expert.
Right.
So Dr. Russell and Brandon saying, you have memory problems. And she was so shocked to hear that. She felt so offended.
Were you offended that he asked her that?
Yes, because you don't need to ask that. She's presenting a report, and that's her work. You don't need to ask. Because felt like he was asking that because she was an elderly lady. I don't know. I felt bad for her.
Well, Alan Jackson yesterday pointed out that when he was questioning Dr. Russell, that Brennan objected 49 times.
Oh.
And Canone, the judge, sustained every single one of those objections.
Yeah, I think I said that in the interview that I gave to Jessica Machado yesterday. It was hard to follow Dr. Russell's testimony because there was a lot of pauses of objections and everything, sustained, and we couldn't get the answer straight from her to make up our minds to, you know, keep the process going in our heads. So yeah, there was the special in her testimony that I wish the judge would stop. And
let's go down the list of the lawyers. Who was the most impressive defense lawyer, do you think? Who did you like the most?
So Jackson Action, he was the person who would wake us up. We have like a very technical witness, and then it's hard to follow numbers, math. And then he would come up and then, so with his theatrical way of work, make us woke up. So it was nice to hear from him. But my favorite attorney was Bob Alessi. I just found him on Twitter. I think he is incredible, knowledgeable. The way he talks made it easy for us to understand. He's so polite. He show at the same time kindness to everyone who was around. At the same time, he was being firm and straightforward in the things he needed to know. Very respectful to all witnesses. And I admire that. I like it. I because of my background as an attorney, I know when they are just, you know, making their drama, their scene is part of the game when in trial. They need to catch us on emotion.
So you're an attorney?
I am attorney. Very clear, from Brazil. My license is in Brazil, but I study law, so I know how to behave in trial, kind of, in court. Don't work with this anymore, but I kind of was trained for that. So I kind of understand the process, their thinking process of the lawyers. But Alessi was definitely my favorite because even though he was like crushing a witness, it was with kindness. That was interesting to watch.
Did you and the jurors, it sometimes feel like a lawyer has got to sort of, you know, be at least likable with the jury? Was Brennan a likable?
At the beginning he was. At the end, no. At the end, like, we thought he was a good guy, like good cop, bad cop. And he was the bad cop by the end.
You think was it just that he knew he was losing the case and he just had...
It felt a little desperation, yes. Frustration, definitely. There was a time he threw some paperwork on the table. He was angry.
Was there anything about the trial that made you uncomfortable? Any of the testimony or any of the actions of the lawyers?
The action of the lawyers, again, when they were offensive sometimes... even like Jackson and Buchanek, do you want a dictionary? Do you want that exchange about not understanding? I hate make you do this. Oh, you don't. Was a little tense, but also entertaining to see that exchange. Like he wants to take something from him. He's Buchanek and other side avoiding. So
you guys were into entertainment just like we were watching
some witnesses were entertaining, yes.
Who was the most entertaining witness?
I think the exchange between Alan Jackson and Buchanek was very interesting because clearly he wants to take things out of him and is repeating and he's on the defensive. He's hiding his questions. He's trying to go around and not being directed, answering directly. So that was very good to watch.
Do you have a theory as to what happened?
I do. I think maybe she clipped him, she touched him, or she backed up too fast. This is on the data of Aperture. If the data is true, considering the other mistakes they made, we don't know. But if she backed up too fast and maybe hit the curb, or he had to jump far away from her or something, and maybe he lost his shoes in that event, I don't know. He was drunk. He had a lot of alcohol, more than her. And then she left. She didn't know what happened. He has to go inside the house. Of course, his girlfriend is not there. It's a blizzard. He doesn't have a shoe or he's drunk. He goes inside the house. Something happened inside the house. What is? I don't know. But I find very suspicious that Brian Higgins wasn't investigated. And on this time, at least, he wasn't brought out. I don't understand why the Alberts didn't came out and why the dog didn't bark at all. If it was a big dog and there was a lot of movement in front of the house. Oh, there was a noise, no sirens. Okay, but it was light and there was like five cars, I don't know, coming in and out and a woman screaming. The dog would bark. Any dog would bark. So there was those holes that we can't fill in, I can't fill in.
Sounds like you were pretty sure the way it was going to go when you after the charge to the jury and the closing arguments.
I was, yes. I got in the liberation room, knew what I wanted. I could change my mind, yes. Hearing other people, what their notes were, maybe I wrote something wrong. We discussed, everybody did. Mm-hmm. We compare each other's notes because we want to be sure that we all heard the same thing, we all saw the same thing, and that's how we're going to get to conclusion. The verdict was very confusing. because I would prefer if I see lesser offense, guilt or not guilty, but was confusing. We thought that if we charge her with the OUI, we also would charge her with the manslaughter, for example. That's what we thought first. So we need to work around why it's not a manslaughter. But I don't think any of us thought it was murder in second degree, ever. That I don't think none of us thought that.
How was the food, by the way?
Horrible.
Horrible.
Sorry, I gained 10 pounds, guys. Like, I'm over 2 months just eating bread for lunch every day. I was doing so good. No, they give us menus and we have like two or three options, restaurants. But in general, with sandwich, chips and soda. And I have way too many kids at home. I already have to cook for them. So I couldn't cook for me to bring lunch every day. So I ate bread every single day of this trial or pizza on Fridays.
Are you happy that you had this experience? I mean, it took 2 months out of your life, basically.
I am. Why? I am, most of the time, I'm a stay-home mom, okay? I'm like Jen McCabe like to say, I'm just a mom. And being out of the house every day and giving me this routine, like, feels like work again and make me remember my days before kids, when I wake up, dress up, and go to work. So I like this experience. And beyond my personal feeling, the power gave to me to decide in someone's faith, great, huge responsibility, but also I'm happy to be part of it and be able to serve justice. That's like, I'm really happy that I'm confident that Karen Reed is not going to jail. She's not going to pay for something she didn't do. And this filled me with joy, for real. And filled me with anger, the fact that we don't know what happened with John O'Keefe. That's the angry part that I want to know.
All right. Okay. And anything you want to say to Karen Reed directly?
Karen Reed, I'm sorry I judge you, but your behavior in court at first, it's never good to judge the person at first sight. I actually admire your demeanor, and I'm happy that you're free now to live your life, to recover. I mean, can't recover the time missed, but I really hope you find peace and happiness and joy with your family, rest, and God bless you. That's it.
All right, Paula Brado, juror number 11, thank you so much for being with us here.
Thank you
today.
For having me.
And it's very very revealing what you've told us. And thank you for your service, for
thank
giving
you.
Up the 2 months.
No problem.
We appreciate it. Oh, summer. Today is the longest day of the year, the summer solstice. Summer is finally here. The weather has finally taken a turn for the better. More warmth, more light, more time to spend outside. Summer is a time to be out and about, enjoying every moment from sunup to sundown. But we all need a sidekick who can keep up so we can enjoy our favorite music, podcasts, and calls in crystal clear sound all day long. That sidekick is the Everyday Earbuds from Raycon. Raycon's everyday earbuds are the perfect summer accessory, whether you're going hard at the gym, enjoying the sun, and taking those work calls outside, or jamming out while barbecuing to your favorite tunes. Enjoy premium audio that goes where you go. Raycon's latest model is better than ever, with a 32-hour battery life and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. Speaking of batteries, with Raycon's quick charge function, just 10 minutes of charging yields 90 minutes of battery. These earbuds also come with active noise cancellation, something difficult to find at such an accessible price point. Raycons start at just half the price of other premium audio brands. Raycon's everyday earbuds come in a variety of vibrant colors to match your summer vibe. Here's my favorite, blue. But they've got them in every color imaginable. I love my Raycons. I wear them when I take Roscoe out in the morning. I wear them when I take him out for a walk at night. I just love them. They're good. And you know the best thing about them? When you're enjoying your favorite audio, you're not bothering anybody else. No one will complain because no one can hear them. You're going to love your Raycons, but if you're not, Raycons offer a 30-day happiness guarantee return policy. No questions asked. Go to buyraycon.com/Howie to get 15% off Raycon's best-selling everyday earbuds. They're perfect for the summer, perfect for any season, but especially the summer. Right now, Raycon is offering 15% off their best-selling everyday earbuds, only at buyraycon.com/Howie, buyraycon.com/Howie. I'm Howie Carr.
Follow Howie on X.
I've got to post a link with witty comment.
At Howie Carr Show. Howie Carr is back.
Thanks again to juror number 11, Paula Prado, for coming in and talking to me about this trial of the decade, if not the century so far, in Massachusetts. And you can listen to the entire unedited version of the interview. Wasn't much longer, but it was somewhat longer. You can get that about 3 o'clock at HowieCarrShow.com. It'll be posted as a podcast or wherever you get your Howie Carr Show podcasts. It will be available. And one of the things that we didn't have time for, she gets into, she addresses the Twitter trolls in the unedited version. Because you know she spoke to a couple of people yesterday, and they just the trolls just come after these people. They're just so nasty, and they've lost. And you know, again, he wasn't hit by Karen Reed's SUV. I mean, everybody knew that, including the district attorney and including the special persecutor. They all knew it, but they didn't care. They just went ahead and did this anyway. And it cost so much money. She went into that when we were talking afterwards, she was talking more about how it really, you know, kind of bugged her how much money they were spending on this nonsensical case. She's got four kids. She said all this money, man, maybe a couple of extra summer programs for my kids so I can have a little time off. You know, and it's just, I mean, spending it on anything would be better than this. And I hadn't even when I wrote my column yesterday about all the money they've squandered on these persecutions, not just of Karen Reed, but the two special persecutors of Turtle Boy and the private investigator. I'd forgotten all about all the state police, you know, writing. I knew they, you know, a lot of state police get detail work at the courthouse, but I'd forgotten all about that, you know, trailing the bus and all that. I mean, I'm telling you, it's got to be upwards of $3 million, at least $3 million. 844-500-4242, 844-500-4242. We'll get on to some other topics when we come back. We have a lot to get to, lots going on. Still talking about what's going to happen in Iran with Israel and the nuclear facility at Fordo. We'll get to all of that. 844-500-4242, 844-500-4242. I'm Howie Carr.